Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow, line dance song.
Hey, Songline Nation, welcome to the show here on a Friday. Very quickly, before I bring our guest on, I'd like to give some show notes. If you're looking for some wrestling to attend, lots going on. Tonight, WCWO in Indianapolis, Indiana. Fully Loaded Pro Wrestling in Minot, North Dakota. GSW in Alberta, Alabama. RCW in Springbrook, Alberta. All-Star Wrestling in Squamish, British Columbia. And SCW in our neck of the woods up in Bremerton, Washington. Tomorrow night, NWWA in Milwaukee, Oregon. RCW in Edmonton, Alberta. XWW in Sun Valley, California. DPW in Torrington, Connecticut. CCW in Coral Springs, Florida. NWA in Pavo, Georgia. RCW in Chatsworth, Georgia. Fire Pro Wrestling in Maryville, Indiana. New Wave Pro in Terre Haute, Indiana. MCW in Frederick, Maryland. IWE in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. AWF in Farmington, Minnesota. Still Domain Wrestling in Richfield, Minnesota. ECWA in Woodbury Heights, New Jersey. AIWF in Mount Airy, North Carolina. NCWA in Clayton, North Carolina. NWA in Amarillo, Texas, and tomorrow night, UCW in Saluda, Virginia. I would like to bring on our guest now. He is a longtime veteran, Bobby Blaze. Mr. Blaze, welcome to our show.
Hey, thank you. It's my pleasure. I really appreciate that. And it brings a smile to my face to realize there are that many shows going on over the next this evening, next couple of days, over the weekend, that there's a lot of indie wrestling out there that people can attend. Because I'm a firm believer and I support independent professional wrestling. And it's a real pleasure to be on your show, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Pleasure is all mine. Now, to start off, we would like to ask our traditional first-timers question for people on our show for the first time. What led you to being in the professional wrestling industry?
Well, I always loved professional wrestling since I was a young, young boy many, many years ago. I became a fan. I was first introduced probably around age 5 or 6 to the old WWF by one of my older aunts when I was in Baltimore, Maryland. I moved from there over to Kentucky. You can probably tell from my accent. I have a little southern accent. At about age 8, my brother came running outside and said, "You got to see this, younger brother. You got to see this. You got to see this." And I went inside with him to see what was on TV, and it was wrestling. And it was the old Memphis wrestling. And so I had lost contact with wrestling for a couple of years, so we had moved. And, of course, like I said, him being younger, it's the first time he saw it. So I was like, "Oh, yes, pro wrestling on TV again, you know." And I was hooked. Anyway, I just loved it. And starting about age 12, I went to several shows that were local, actually, in the Kentucky area. And starting about age 12, my brother-in-law, we kept hanging out. And by 15, I was setting up the ring. And, you know, one thing led to another. And eventually I got a little bit of, quote, training of what I thought, because no one smarted me up. Until I had about 10 or 15 matches under my belt. And I had to leave this area in Kentucky to go to Tampa, Florida, to the Malenko Wrestling Academy to train under the great Boris Malenko and his son Dean Malenko and his older son Joe Malenko, who was a big star at the time back in Japan. But I went to the Malenko Wrestling Academy. What led me to it, though, at first I was a fan. I just loved the sport of professional wrestling. I love the appeal, what the guys look like, what the guy has done in the ring, the interviews. I just loved everything about it. From the time I was probably 6 years old on, and at 15, I walked by a TV set, and I mentioned this in my book, Pin Me, Pay Me, cheap plug. I walked by, I was getting ready to go to basketball practice on an early Saturday morning. I walked by a TV set, and Boogie Woogie, he was handsome Jimmy then, but Boogie Woogie, Jimmy Valiant, was doing an interview from the old Memphis tapes, and I looked at it, and I told one of my buddies and one of my coaches, I said, that's what I'm going to be when I grow up. And, you know, they kind of shook their head. But that's, you know, I made the decision at 15, and, you know, that's the way I got. I was hooked on it. I loved it. And I knew that's what I wanted to do someday at some level. So whether it be setting up rings from the age of 15 or, like I said, from 12 until 15, I was going to every show I could locally trying to get it, helps up the ring and this and that. And ICW, the old Popo promotion, they actually let me and my brother set up the ring for the first time when I was 15 after I'd been to about three or four of their shows, at least a monthly show here where I'm at. But, yeah, that's how I got started, man. And I hung around, and I had, you know, odd jobs here and there after high school and college and stuff, of course, but I knew one day that's what I wanted to do. Long answer, short answer of it is I was a fan of the sport of professional wrestling.
You talked about being trained by the great Malenko, who's one of the best trainers in the history of the sport. If a young wrestler wannabe came to you today, who are some of the people out there training that you would most recommend for someone that wanted to follow your path and get into the business?
Well, you know, I still consult and help people out that want to be in a professional wrestling industry. Sadly, some people say they want to do something and they don't. You know, you have to sacrifice a lot to be a professional wrestler. But what I would tell them is first of all, go to someone reputable. And what I would do, honestly, is as I have told people this, pack your bags, go stand in front of the Performance Center in Orlando, Florida, and whether you love or hate the product of the WWE, that's the place to be. I'd go stand by that damn Performance Center every day and say, hey, buddy, come in here, let's see what you got. And I wouldn't care if they made me lift weights, run, beat me to death without puking my guts out or whatever. That's what I'd do. But and many people aren't willing to do that. So with that said, what I would do, and I tell people this, so this is my number two thing, if you're not willing to do that, and I understand the hesitancy of people wanting to do that, or not wanting to do that, rather, I would say go to any seminar that's offered in your area by guys like Les Thatcher, Dr. Tom Pritchard, Al Snow. I see these guys doing these seminars. If I ever do a seminar, which I've done a few, you know, come to the seminar. Pay $20, $40, whatever it takes for that hour, 2 hours, 3 hours you get to spend one of those veterans. I don't care if it's $100 a day. You know, you go to Q-Bar Carmichael. Go to someone that brings in these guys that bring in these guys that do these seminars still. I mentioned Les. I mentioned Dr. Tom. You know, that's just the people that I know personally that when you go to one of those seminars, I know Al Snow very well. When you go, they're going to tell you this is, you know, this is what it takes. And whether you have any experience or no experience, at least, I know Gangrel was here, Dave Heath, a couple of years ago doing a seminar. Someone asked me about it, and I said, go. It's 100 miles away. It's $100. Go. You have nothing to lose. Keep learning. That's the whole thing. The day you stop learning is the day you die, and that's anything. You got to learn. And so there was a guy that probably had, you know, 3 years experience, and I said, what's $100, man? You're out $8 worth of gas and $100, and you get to spend the day in the ring training with someone that's been there, done that, you know. So I don't know, you know, I'm sure you can go to the Monster Factory. You can go to any school, again, the Performance Center. You can go to a cue ball school. That wouldn't matter to me. Go to someone that's been trained professionally, that's been there, done that. And to me, I'd go somewhere with someone that's made money in this business. You know, it's called professional wrestling. Professionals get paid. Don't go to the damn, and this no disrespect to the guy working behind a counter, making $7 an hour, or the cab driver down the street. Don't go to the guy that's never been anywhere and says, hey, pay me $1,500, I'll show you how to be a wrestler. No, you know, because then you're doing something for free. Hell, that's no good, you know. It's called professional wrestling. So you, it's like a piano, it's like life, you know, man. You get out of it what you put into it. So you pay a little bit more, and you pay $100 to a camp for 2 days or 2 hours, whatever it is. But go somewhere that's had a reputation of someone that's been there, done that, made money, that can show you, hey, I'm not here to rip you off. I'm here to show you and teach you and train you how to become a professional wrestler, how to better yourself, you know, as a professional wrestler. And to me, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, I never wanted to be popular. Because to me, popularity is like the slutty little cousin of prestige, if you will. I wanted to do it to make money, doing something I loved doing because it's called professional wrestling and you get paid for it. So, again, long answer. The short answer to that is I don't know all the schools that are out there, but go to one that has a good reputation. You know, go to some guys that have good reputation. Again, Les Thatcher, Dr. Tom Pritchard, Al Snow, those kind of guys that are traveling the country. And I'm sure there's more. I've seen Ricky Morton School over in Tennessee. You know, I've seen him do a few seminars on a couple of shows I've been on. Tracy Smothers here recently, I've been on a couple of shows with him where he'll do an hour or two seminar before the shows start. Go to things like that and become involved. The best advice I can give you other than show up at that performance center, get in shape, look good, talk professional and say, hey, let me in today. Beg, let me in today, you know, and see guys that are down at that performance center that are training these guys nowadays and just stay there on the steps every day or by the ramp or whatever and say, let me in, let me in. It's kind of like Fight Club, you know, you just stand there by the door. That just came to me, but I'm just saying, I would be down at that damn performance center in Orlando, Florida, and I don't care, and I've done it. I lived in Orlando, and I lived in Tampa, and I delivered pizzas to pay for my wrestling lessons. But you know what? Because before I moved to Tampa, I lived in Orlando, which I left my home in Kentucky to move down there after those 10 or 15 matches I was telling you I had. But if I was down there, I don't care what you have to do, bag groceries, deliver pizzas, whatever, get that done so you have living money. And then get your butt down here, stay in front of that performance center, and every day stay in there until they let you in the train. That's what I'd do.
Now, over the course of your career, I'm sure there's been a few injuries like everybody that gets in the ring has to deal with over the course of their career. For someone that's thinking about getting in the ring and wrestling, can you list some of the injuries you've had to overcome just so the people listening know this is a serious business and sometimes injuries do happen?
Yes, sometimes injuries do happen. I am not ashamed to say I'm 50 years old. I'm beat up. My body, I've got bone on bone. Can you cancel this show?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, this is what I answer people. My body's more fucked up than a can of fishing worms. Think about some fishing worms in a can, how many, they're all little bodies all crumbled up in their little fishing. Well, that's the way my body is. My knee, I got bone on bone on my knee. I got a neck surgery and scheduled, I don't know when, I've put it off since 07. They said you'll need one in 2012. I haven't had it, so I'm 3 years, 4 years down from a second neck surgery. So, you know, injuries do take place. I've had chipped teeth. I've had, you know, broken fingers, broken toes. I blew out my ACL was my first major injury in my right knee. You know, I've had a shoulder dislocated back in 88. Things happen, and, you know, and I'm not bitching, complaining, or moaning because, you know what, I'd do it all again. So, of course, you know, I tell people three things. Take care of your body. Save your money because it's not going to last forever. And then also nowadays, have a plan B. Have something to fall back on. But to answer the question, as far as injuries go, yeah, I've had, you know, pulled ACL, tore my shoulder, like I said, blew out the my left shoulder, neck surgery, loss of chipped teeth, broken fingering, et cetera, because you're not in there doing ballet. And I've had documented, and I'm writing about this in my second book, I've had 13 concussions documented. Now, of those 13 that were documented, 9 of them were wrestling-related. One was at about age 9 or 10. One was a car wreck I had about 4.5 years ago. That was the last concussion I had. So that accounts for a couple more outside the ring, football, basketball, other sports. But 9 of them were wrestling-related. So injuries do happen. They impact your life. I think a lot of problems I have in my life, personal and professional, are all concussion related, to be quite honest with you. Some of the health issues I have. And I'm not pissing, bitching, moaning about any of it. I'd do it all again. I'd do more of it faster, harder, and all that. But I just say this, take care of your body, take care of your money, you know, and have a plan B.
Very well said. Now, you were in a couple of larger companies. You were in Smoky Mountain Wrestling in the mid-90s, and then later in the decade, you went to WCW. Looking back on those companies, there's a lot of stories that's been told about how politics played a big role in those two companies. For someone that was there at the time, did you see a lot of political camps in the two promotions, a lot of politics being played as far as who advanced and who got the money and so forth and so on?
Yes and no, because I'm one of these people that, you know, if it doesn't concern me, I usually don't get involved. You know, if it concerns me and my money, you know, I get really involved. I had actually done some WWF TV tapings. I had been up in a company in Canada in 1990, 91, a little bit 92. So I'd been on Rodel Independent, which was the Grand Prix used to run a territory for about 16 weeks out of the year. And I had been to, several other countries wrestling. But by the time, and so I had went to WWF, just done a few TVs under my real name. And then finally, some things happen. I get a break with Smoky Mountain. So when I get there, I'm sure politics are involved and were involved. But, you know, what we had in Smoky Mountain was really something special. And, I saw guys coming and going, but it was mostly guys that was coming in that Cornette was feeding to us as babyfaces. You know, had Ricky and Robert as a tag team, had Tracy Smothers, and had me. And we was the main four babyfaces of the company there for a long time while I was there. And they'd feed us people, you know. Again, it goes to, like, when it comes to politics, when they bring in The Undertaker for a weekend show to work the main event for two big shows, you know that's political, that what's going to take place during those shows. And it brought the house up tremendously. But, you know, guys like Unabomb, Glenn Jacobs, who I think the world of, Kane, of course, who I'm speaking of, when he came in, I knew him prior to him even arriving in Smoky Mountain. But, he was going to get the bigger matches and get a big push real quick because, you know, Cornette was doing some stuff with WWE at the time. And him and Al Snow immediately tagged him with Al, got us some more experience, immediately put him with people, you know, like Ricky and Robert, to work with these guys. And sure, there's politics involved that away that, you know, hey, you know, you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours kind of thing. But the guy deserves everything, you know, he everything he has gotten, the success he has gotten from his business, he deserved. He was there working hard. So if you want to call that politics, you know, that's one thing. But, yeah, he deserved it for someone to come in and immediately get a push to the top. And they needed someone. They didn't have any heels any longer because Heavenly Bodies had moved on to the WWF at that time or WWE. So they needed someone. And when Al Snow and Glenn or you know, Unabomber came in and started working on top of Ricky Roberts. There was a reason for that, and I understood that. So I had no problem with that. And WCW, obviously, you're talking about a huge company, and you talk about politics. My God, you walk in, and it was just like you go into any locker room, and I always try to go off all the guys. But you'd have all the Mexican guys in one corner. You'd have all the Japanese guys in another corner. You'd have the guys that I considered a Florida crew, you know, sitting around with their crew. You had guys that worked in Minnesota territories, all those guys that worked. Everyone pretty much segregated themselves to the guys that worked in Smoky Mountain and all of the companies, the old NWA, the Southern guys, if you will. Everyone kind of segregated themselves as to which group they held out with, because at the time I was there, Bischoff, you know, he's playing politics with everyone, and he's only talking to guys that's making over $500,000 a year. You know, if you're sitting there making, you know, $7,500, $150,000 a year, he didn't have time for you. You know, I knew Dean Malenko obviously very well. Got to know Eddie and Chris and Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, and Chris Jericho very well. I had been overseas with Dean and Chris Benoit and knew Eddie before I got there, knew Jericho from Smoky Mountain. But you could see the writing on the wall that, you know, hey, these guys are talented and they're on this level, and you got they're drawing the ratings, yet you got your top guys going in. And I've walked before we shut down. Here's how political it was. There's a whiteboard, and you know, you're going live on national TV at 8 o'clock, and you got 60 guys in a building for a Nitro, and on that board it might have a few matches, and you might see, well, I am working or I'm not working. And they're still in there discussing who's going on the main event, and not only who's going to be the main event, who's going over. So you'd have guys like Hogan and Sid Vicious, or Sid, you know, they're in there arguing about who's going over. And going back to injuries, one of the last serious injuries I had in the ring was due to Sid Vicious. He dropped several people, just dropped them straight down their head, and I got a concussion, a torn abdominal, lacerated my kidney, one of them. And so, yeah, injuries do happen, to get back to that. But as far as politics go, and I watched, and it's no dig towards anyone, because if you read my book, I didn't spread trash from anyone, talk about who done this, who done that, you know, who was screwing someone that was married, who was doing a drug. I tried to keep things very positive. To answer your question, I've seen, and I like this guy, DDP, walk in, see the board, and see so-and-so versus DDP, and him say, that ain't going to happen. Go into the office, come back, take the dry eraser marker, and put DDP versus, and put whoever he wanted to work with, because he was one of Bischoff's buddies, and also he worked his ass off to get to his position. I understand that. Mark out, erase the other name, put someone he wanted to work with that he knew he could work with, you know. So that's all political, but I didn't get caught up in that. Man, I go in, I see my name, they give me a booking sheet, you know, 3 months in advance or a month in advance, whatever it was I would get, and Ted Turner's checks didn't bounce, and I just kept getting them every 2 weeks from FedEx delivered to my door, and I went and done my job. And if they called me into the office for whatever, whether I went to the room to know the war room, to know I was going over, or putting someone over, I went out there and I done my job. And I was only disappointed in 2 times in 3 years that I was there with WCW. They put me in someone, and I was supposed to get like 8 minutes and do this, and I was supposed to do that. And it just ended a different way. And it was just one of those things where I know that's political as well. One time, Terry Taylor had left to go to New York, WWE, for a short time there. And I walked in and spoke to Arn Anderson. I said, hey, we just done this last week, and now you have me doing this. What's going on? He said, well, Bobby, you know, Terry's no longer here. Who you working with? I told him, he said, go out there and have a good match, and don't say no, and we'll go from there and see what happens. And, you know, I went out there, done what I was supposed to do, come back, and a couple weeks later, Terry was back, and it was like, okay, now we're going to do this with you. And I was like, okay, fine. I'm just here. I'm here to do my job. So, yeah, there's politic ass in WCW. But I didn't get caught up in all that, because I wasn't one of the top guys making over 500 that was bitching and complaining. I'm making a grand a night, working 70, 80 nights a year, getting pay-per-view money, getting, they put me on the video and, some video games and stuff and getting royalties from that. So, what do I got to bitch about? I'm doing something, again, that I love doing, and I'm getting paid for it, and I'm getting paid well for it. No complaints. And they can keep the politics and shove them straight up their ass. Sadly, because of that, though, it shut the whole company down. And, now we know the situation we're in with that because Vince owns the whole library and is just a genius in what he does. And I'm sure from what I know, have seen back in WWF days, from what I know of guys that have worked there regular that I see on some of these independent shows and stuff, you think WWE and political, believe me, it is. And you better know your place in that locker room, and you better know, who to say yes, sir, no, sir, to, and yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, to, and you don't say no. You keep your job, because them guys are making good money and deservedly so for the hard work for being the athletes as they are. But, yeah, there's a huge, huge political backing behind a lot of that. And I'm sure the same could be said in TNA and Ring of Honor as well. I know a couple guys are now in WWE under the NXT banner that work for Ring of Honor that didn't get along with Cornette. Well, they didn't get along with Cornette for a certain reason. There was a reason for that. Cornette is Cornette. He wanted things his way. He asked you to do certain things when he was in Ring of Honor. You didn't do them. I'm sure them guys had heat with them. And I'm sure he could give a fuck less, to be honest with you, because I know him too well. But those guys are doing really good in NXT now, and they're going to continue to do their good, and they're going to continue to do great when they get up to the main roster. And because the business has changed, I throw this out there as a joke, but I think Bobby Eaton, myself, and Jim Cornette, and I'm not so sold on Jim Cornette anymore, are probably the only three people who still believe professional wrestling's real, So we bleed that away. So I'm sure when Cornette had heat with some of those guys when they used to be back in Ring of Honor, and that's their deal. That's not mine. I'm sure it's because he saw it as a wrestling company, wanted it to be wrestling the way you remember it, the way it should be, kind of thing. And they butted heads, I'm sure. And some of these guys now are in NXT. And again, a couple of them on the main roster. And I think they'll all eventually make the main roster because they're all very, very talented guys. They just might have butted heads with someone else that had a different creative idea, if that makes sense, at that time.
That does make sense. Now, also in your career, you worked with a very wide variety of referees, guys that were inexperienced, I'm sure, on the independents. You've worked with some of the very best ones of all time in Smoky Mountain, WCW, I'm sure, some of the independent guys, extremely good. In your opinion, who are some of the better referees you've had a chance to work with, and who are some of the ones that you've come across on the independents that promoters should book more to help their shows?
Well, of course, I got to go back to Mark Curtis. He was a huge influence on me because he was part of the office there at Smoky Mountain, him and Sandy Scott, along with, Tim Horner and Jim Cornette when I originally started. But Tommy Young had just left, and Mark Hildebrand, Mark Curtis, had just started full-time shortly before I did. I thought he, and rest in peace. He and I had some kind of connection. We loved the business, and, he always wanted to be a wrestler, and he worked hard at his craft. He was a very good referee. He was the main referee at Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and he had a thing with me that he knew he could go ahead and throw his hand down on that three count, that if I was going to get pinned, that I would kick out, and I've never had anyone that I had such a connection with that away. That when I was going to kick out, whether I was working with Candido or White Boy or whoever I was working with, Killer Kyle or whoever, Jerry Lawler, at the very last second, I would get my shoulder off that mat. But I had been trained properly. But he had no fear in throwing that arm down, ready to count that three count if I did not kick out. And, you know, I'm talking inches from the mat, and boom. And that there was just something special about working with someone like Mark Curtis in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Of course, he was in WCW. When I got to WCW, you know, there was Nick Patrick. He was brought up in the business. His dad was one of the original assassins, so he's around the business his entire life. Nick was one of those guys that he understood talent because he grew up in the business. He also worked in the Georgia, Florida, Alabama areas where the Armstrongs, who were good friends of mine, worked. And when I met Nick, he was another one of those guys I clicked with, and he automatically, you know, he would say, you know, hey, Bobby, you know, here's the finish, or I know the finish ahead of time, or hey, Bobby, what's your finish, and I'll see you in the ring. You just click with those guys. So those are some old school guys. I see some guys, and then Scotty Armstrong, you know, eventually went to WWE. I know he works as a road agent now. He'd done some work with WWE. Again, it just shows you paying your dues, and he went from being a wrestler to a referee. Now he's a road agent. And a very young Drake Younger, Drake Wartz, you know, now he's NXT. I think it's just a matter of time for him to be on the main roster regular. Again, it just depends. So those are just some names that come off the top of my head, you know, real fresh. And I remember years and years and years ago, hitting back, you know, doing even just doing a WWE FTV, you know, Dick Worley or Dave Hepner, you know, you're like, woo, you know, that's like, you know, Lance Russell or Gordon Soley announced your match, you know. You know, get one of them veteran referees like that. On the indies, you know, I've had guys that just, you know, are clueless. You're talking your way through a match trying to tell them, look this, do that, tell this guy. And that's just part of the business, and I'm not going to sit here and bury anyone. So, on the independent show, I don't know enough independent referees. The ones I know a couple guys in West Virginia that do shows in the tri-state area. When I say that, it's West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio, within a short driving distance of my home. But I attend, I get to where I go to shows. The next show I'm scheduled, I'm going to one in April and one in May. I'm going to see Cornette and Pritchard and Lawler at a show in May, and one in April, just a smaller show they want me to show up at with Ricky Morton and Bobby Eaton, et cetera. But anyway, again, to get back to the referee thing, you know, it's one of these things where I don't know enough of these referees nowadays. The younger guys, you know, there's a couple guys in these smaller independent shows, but I don't know them. The guys I do know only work these smaller shows that, when I say smaller, you're talking, you know, 300 or 400 people at a show. And, you know, they work regular around here, and they're good guys and they're good referees. And I try to tell them and help them, you know, hey, do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that kind of thing. And they're good young kids. But now there's a kid, God, if he's listening, his head's going to swell up. There's a kid named Brandon Ashworth, and there's another kid named Brandon also. But I renamed him. I said, you know what, you remind me of Jerry Calhoun. So he goes by the referee. He goes by Referee Calhoun, and he does. And so he does a really good job. So there's two young boys named Brandon. There's a kid named Justin that works out of West Virginia. It's a good referee. But these are guys that I know that I've helped, you know what I'm saying? They're not guys that go out on the road regular. Man, I met a guy about a year ago, and I've seen him on about 3 or 4 shows. He worked out of OVW. His name was Dave. But one of the guys I had helped here locally said, hey, you know, this guy had went to OVW for about 8 months. And he said, I got a friend. He's going to be in town this week. Do you think we could use him on a show? And honestly, I don't know his last name, but he done a hell of a job. We went to a WWF show, WWE show together and set together several months back. And there's talent out there. You just got to have an eye for it. And there's shit out there. And most people have an eye for that. So I'm not going to browbeat or beat down anyone because I don't know enough of them to say it. But I know the ones that I've helped because, again, it goes back to what I – this is just my opinion. And everyone knows, and excuse my language, it's just the way I talk normal. Opinions like assholes. Everyone's got one, and they all smell like shit. But the people that take the time to listen to someone that's been there, done that, had the T-shirts printed, sold the T-shirts, made money off the T-shirts, then listen to that person. And so if these guys and a couple of them guys I mentioned, the two brands I mentioned, if they listen, and it's not because I know it all, and I tell people this all the time, it's not because I'm so smart, it's because you're so fucking stupid. Don't be an idiot. Don't travel 300 miles for a $50 payoff and you're out $200 in gas in a hotel. Are you an idiot? You know, so I try to tell people it's professional wrestling. Pros make money, you know, and they it's just that whole law of attraction and action. If you really want to do something in this business, you can. And sure, you got to pay your dues for it, but these referees, you know, same thing. Get in a car with three or four of the guys, split the cost to make you 50 or 100 bucks and keep getting experience. But I don't know that I want to ever bury any of these referees. One of my best referees I used to use, he passed away a couple years ago this coming summer. And, again, he was one of these guys that wanted to learn. He listened. He learned. And we was in a match, and this has, again, been several years ago you're talking. But he passed away at a real young age, I will say that. But I took him to several shows, and the first match he got to wrestle or referee was a Jimmy Valiant, a Boogie Woogie Man Jimmy Valiant match. The probably third or fourth show he was on, Manny Fernandez was running the heel locker room for me, and I was running the baby locker room. And this guy could not believe that Manny Fernandez came up to him after a show and said, "You're going to be a hell of a referee in this business, kid." And he ended up being pretty good on the independents. His name was we used him as Sandy McGee, the blind referee, because he had his big, thick Coke bottle glasses that he used to wear, and he couldn't see anything without them, so we would rib him about it. But he was a great referee on the independent scene for me. I took him around all over, you know, Kentucky, West Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, you know, all over the Southeast, and he done a tremendous job, got paid what he made money, which is what I told him, Bill. It really was Bill, you're in this to make money. Don't be a fucking village idiot. Don't go down the street for $5. Get in the car. Go make some money. But, referees are very important. In fact, my new book is going to be coming out soon, another cheap plug. It's called I Kicked Out on Two, The Education of a Wrestler. And I'm plugging it. Boom, there it is. But I talk about that. It's called Questionable Tactics, and it's all about the refereeing. And I mentioned all those guys. I mentioned Drake. I mentioned Scotty. I mentioned a good friend of mine that used to work up in Canada. He started off as one of the boys, ended up refereeing up there, Dan Marsh. He was a hell of a referee back in the day, but he's like me. He's 50 years old. I caught up with him on social media. We all know how important that is. And you can find me at BobbyBlaze744 on Twitter, or Bobby Blaze Smedley on Facebook, or my fan page, which is just Bobby Blaze Athlete fan page. But I talked to Dan. Hell, he's on a hockey game tonight up in Canada, out on the East Coast there. He was a hell of a referee. So I'm so out of touch with some of these local guys, and so out of touch with the guys that are refereeing on a national level. All I can tell them is the same thing I tell the boys. Do it. Treat it like a real sport. I've got another article or chapter about wrestling called Let's Make Pro Wrestling a Sport Again. And I got one called Leaders in the Locker Room. I got one called Questionable Tactics, all about refereeing. So this next book is going to be more of an educational book towards professional wrestling of some of the questions you're asking me. And again, obviously, if you ask me a question, you get the short question answer or you get the long answer. And I, again, have alluded to the long answer, but the simple answer is this. There's a lot of good independent referees out there, and keep perfecting your craft. Pack your stuff. Go to WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, ROH, or wherever you want to work. If you're in California, go somewhere, you know, wherever. Get there, show up at the show on time and tell them, I'm a referee. I want to referee these matches. I'm experienced. If you are, and because it will show if you don't, because you'll fuck up that finish every time if you don't, and a referee is very important. And I wrestled Dan Severn twice, once in North Carolina for the NWA title. He only had three fights at the time. Brian Hildebrand refereed that match. It was about an 80-20 shoot, and I talk about that in Pin Me Pay Me. By the same token, about 4 months later, I wrestled Dan Severn in Knoxville, Tennessee, in front of 6,000 people at Super Bowl Professional Wrestling. And Dan Severn and I had a match that was way better than a match we had had in Charlotte. But at this time, he came to my home, stayed with me. We trained together for a couple of days, and I said, look, I've been on their TV for like 3 years. If you'll do this, because he wasn't letting me counter anything. Hell, he was ready to shoot. And I'm like, so we made it about 50-50 the second time with him going over, of course. I had no problem. But the referee in the match, you know, he missed several little key pins and key spots. And it was just someone that wasn't a regular full-time referee for Smoky Mountain Wrestling back in the day. And it fucked up. It didn't fuck up the finish by any means, but a couple quick takedowns and quick pins. Hildebrand or Mark Curtis would have been down there 1-2, and I'd have kicked out, and so would have Severn. But this guy was slow even to get down, so by the time he got down there, we both kicked out on the one count. And so a referee is very, very important with your job, because it takes you as a performer, it takes your opponent as a performer, it takes the referee. But a referee is seen, okay, to an extent, but he doesn't get the heat on him to keep the heat on the boys. You know, so a good referee knows that hey, I am the referee. You don't go to high school, college, and NFL, sometimes it happens, sadly, that the referee gets a little bit of heat or whatever. But the NFL is so huge, it doesn't take away from it. But these guys at referee, they are seen, they're heard, but in a secondary basis type thing. You know, they're there. They enforce the rules, but in high school and collegiate basketball, them referees know I'm a referee. It's real. And their name is not the one printed in the paper the next day. They understand that. Yeah, you got your controversial one in the NFL that makes a bad call. Of course, they get their name in the paper. But they understand that the good ones, Major League umpires, you know, NFL, NBA, the good ones, they know they are there to officiate professionally the game, just like you would in a match. You're a part of the show, and you're a very important part of it. But I'm not calling out those sports shows. I'm just saying they understand a referee, how important they are, to stay in the background, only be seen when you're supposed to be seen. Do what you're supposed to do, because they are just as important as the match to keep it, quote, a professional match as the two performers are. That's called questionable tactics.
Definitely looking forward to reading that part of the book when it comes out. And we have a game we like to play on our show called Word Association. It's just a little psychological game. I'll throw out the name of some of the people that you come across in your career, and the first word or two that pops into your head to describe them would be the answer. Are you prepared to play around the word association?
Okay, well, okay. Hold on 1 second. Let me say two things. Number one, send me your address, and I'll send you a copy of the next book when it does come out for having me on your show. To answer your second question, am I ready? Is this a psychological test? Because every time I look at those ink blots, I see two goats fucking. I don't know. Yeah, sure, I'll play your game. I know
all
you
right.
Probably don't get my sense of humor. I'm just kidding you. Send me some words, name association, and I'll say the first thing that comes in my head. Sure, I'm game for it.
All right, here we go. First name, Ricky Morton.
Oh, Ricky Morton, best baby face in the business ever.
Joe Malenko.
So baby face. So who was next? I'm sorry, I got stuck with Ricky Morton. I said baby face.
Joe Malenko.
Joe Malenko, shooter, tough SOB, legit, the real deal, and a true gentleman.
Bobby Heenan.
Second to no one ever as a professional wrestler manager.
Kevin Sullivan.
Pure genius. Many people don't realize the contributions he has made to the world of professional wrestling as a booker, as a wrestler, again, as a booker agent. Pure fucking genius, Kevin Sullivan. Nothing but respect for Kevin Sullivan.
Teddy Long.
Great guy. Makes me laugh with his interviews when he done them. Good referee. Love him to death. More power to you, Teddy, brother. You're a player. So the first word that comes to mind when I see Teddy Long or hear Teddy Long, player. Playa. How do those guys say it? Playa?
Playa. Yeah,
but for real, playa. I don't know.
How about Sonny Ono?
Pass, because I'll just bury him.
Sherry Martel.
First class act. Love Sherry Martel. Former as a wrestler, female, as a manager, as a human being. Loved Sherry Martel to death. First class female.
Lance Storm.
Great guy, very, very talented wrestler. Didn't get to work with him enough to be around him, but obviously good head on his shoulders, great body, great talent, and all-around good guy.
Bob Caudle.
Tremendous voice, tremendous talent. Never took away from what was taking place in the ring. Never put the spotlight on him, always put the matches over, always put the show over. Bob Caudle, first class gentleman, and so the word that would be for him would be professional gentleman.
Booker T.
Love Booker T. Talented, talented, talented. Got a couple Booker T stories, won't go into, but Booker T worked his ass off to get to where he was at. Relentless, never gives up, never gave up. Again, another first-class guy that's just a great, all-around good guy that I always got along with. Only due to one word, when I hear Booker T, the first word that comes out of my mouth, here's your short answer, he and I hit it off. And I have nothing but respect for Booker T.
Tony Anthony.
The dirty white boy. Tony Anthony. Tony Anthony, as Jim Cornette said, you couldn't blow his ass out of Knoxville, Tennessee, if you stuck dynamite under it. Tony was a little bit hesitant about working with me at the beginning. Worked with me, understood what Cornette wanted. It took time for a couple people to get through to him. Hey, this guy is young, but he's been places. He's not green. He's been places. Give him more. Work with him more. So the best thing I can say about Tony Anthony is professional. He understood, finally. Took a couple weeks. Hey, professional. I like Tony. No heat. But, you know, a little bit hard-headed at the beginning. But when I got to work with him, he understood this kid has talent, professional.
And the last name, Rick Steiner.
Rick Steiner. Legitimate badass, tough guy, was always, always, always very respectful to me. And I think that stemmed from the respect I extended to him. That he understood, you know, you're talking about a guy that was an NCAA, you know, champion in the top three, amateur wrestling, legitimate wrestler, a tremendous tremendously strong athlete. I'll go back to the same word I used for Booker T with Rick Steiner. Nothing but the word is respect. I don't know where you got those names at, but I can dig it.
All right. Well, my understanding from some of my sources indicate to me that there is a wrestling-themed Ramones core pop punk band called the Razor Ramones, and you're a fan of those guys. Can you confirm this for us?
I will confirm it. And here, and I when you started that question, I knew it was coming. So here's the deal, man. You can go back to this grunge music that these, quote, kids were listening to 25 years ago. But you know what? Punk rock goes back 40 years ago. But you know what? I'll still take, and other than Freebird and Turn the Page on rock and roll, which I love rock and roll, especially classic rock, I'll take Turn the Page and Freebird. I love those songs. They go on, you know, they're jamming, blah, blah. But you know what? I'll take a 2 or 3 minutes riff of ass-kicking punk rock, the Ramones, the Razor Ramones. I'll take that 2 or 3 minutes of just banging the fuck out of those drums, sing it as loud as you can, hit that guitar, hit that bass. Boom, 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 and the Razor Ramones, they're over with me, man. So the answer is I confirm that I am a Razor Ramones fan.
Do you own a Razor Ramones T-shirt?
Yes, I do, and I love it. Where the hell is my Razor Ramones T-shirt? I threw it in the washer the other day. I got to put that on, take another damn picture for social media, by God. And I love it. I love my Razor Ramones T-shirt.
That's tremendous.
Because
I know,
they're tremendous.
Exactly. Now, in a lot of matches you had, you were usually the smaller guy in the bigger companies like WCW, usually worked some of the giants in there. What would you say was the biggest size difference you ever had in a match?
Oh, well, you know, I worked with Goldberg. You know, he was legitimately, you know, about 280. You know, I worked with Scott Steiner, and what a great body he had. I don't even know if you call that work. God damn, I was just trying to live. You know, but truthfully, the biggest, and I met Andre Giant when I was 15 years old. I told you what a fan I was. That's probably the biggest human. No, there's no problem. Andre Giant was the biggest person I ever met in my life. I shook his hand when I was 15 years old at a show in Huntington, West Virginia. But in the ring, during the second World War III in 1998, I was on a pay-per-view in 97 and 98. But in 1998, at the second World War III, I was supposed to work with, I won't mention his name because I already mentioned earlier. The first one I got eliminated after about 7 minutes or whatever. The next one, the second one, I was getting ready to go in. I knew when I was going to go out, blah, blah, blah. Everyone knows this is work. Life's a work. I don't care. But I was trying to make my way to this certain person when all of a sudden the giant, you know, the Big Show, comes up behind me and puts one hand on the back of my head to grab my mullet and grabbed his whole hand, like swallowed my head like a basketball. He swallowed like a fucking softball. The other one went to my trunks and grabbed me, and all I remember was, time to go, boss. And he picked me up and threw me outside the ring. So I didn't have an individual match with him, but to be with someone that damn big, knowing I'm trying to get over here too, I think the second time was actually Glacier, Ray Lloyd, was going to eliminate me the second year. And I was trying to, now I was working around, you're doing your thing. You got, you know, 3 damn rings. You got 60 damn people, and you're trying to do this and do that. But you know what? When he grabbed me, I knew someone fucking grabbed me. So, yeah, the Big Show, without a question, You know, as far as you know, Goldberg, as far as big, strong, and same with Steiner, just big, you know, big cocksucking strong guys. But as far as big country strong, if someone grabs you and they're 7 foot tall, 7 foot tall, too tall, and they're 450 pounds, and they grab you by the back of the head and by the pants and pick you up and lift you up shoulder and just throw you. Now, Killer Kyle was strong in Smoky Mountain. He press slammed me several times. I mean, he was 300 pounds. But when a 450-pound fucking giant grabs you from behind and gives you the courtesy to say, time to go, boss, you know you better hell out. You're ready to yell, yo, Adrian, because you're about ready to go to about the third or fifth fucking row. You know, luckily for me, I went a little bit short of where the mat ended outside the ring during that. So, yeah, big show.
Well, we have just a few minutes left in our show. I want to give that time to you to say anything you'd like to say to the listeners, plug and promote everything you would like, book, social medias, upcoming appearances, anything you would like. Floor is all yours.
Hey, well, first of all, let me say this. Thank you for being very professional, very courteous. Thank you for taking my long answers. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure being on the show. As far as promotional stuff, you know, I've got a book out called Pin Me, Pay Me. All you have to do really is go to Google and you type in Pin Me, and it'll come up Pin Me, Pay Me, and my book image is there. So Pin Me, Pay Me on Amazon.com. Pin Me, Pay Me, you can download it on a anything, tablet, phone, computer, or Kindle that has a Kindle-free app. Pin Me, Pay Me, type that in, download my book. It's only $4.50. Better yet, buy a hard copy of it. It's $14.50. You know, get that book, Pin Me, Pay Me. I have a short story that will be published within the next 2 weeks. It's called Yard Time in the Big House. It's about a 5,000 word. And look for it. It's going to be on Amazon as well, and CreateSpace and Kindle. It's a short story about a wrestling show that took place in a prison that was great. So I hope people buy that. But it's part of what is going to be my second book, which hopefully will be out this summer, no later than September 1st. It's called I Kicked Out on Two, The Education of a Wrestler. You can find my stuff at BobbyBlaze744 on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, BobbyBlaze744, or on Facebook at BobbyBlazeSmedley, BobbyBlazeAthlete on the fan page. And, again, you go to Amazon or you go to anything, just type in Pin Me, Pay Me, and you'll see the image of my book. Buy the hell out of it, please. I need the money. And that's what I promote because that's what I do. And also, you know, turn into shows like this. That's what keeps us going, man. The Turnbuckle Turmoil, the SGWS, the you know, the independent shows. A lot of guys. It's how you know we get a payday. We get extra. Some of us, you know, we're older. We don't do it full time any longer, you know. But we're still a part of some history, if you will. And thanks to the WWE Network, you know, you still see a lot of our matches, whether it be in Smoky Mountain or the old NWA. Or WCW, or you know, Mid South, or whoever they have fucking on there nowadays. You know, when you see us on there, you know, just realize those are guys that's been there, done that, man, and made money living from. It's called again professional wrestling. So, Bobby Blaze 744 on Twitter, and Instagram, Bobby Blaze Smedley on Facebook, or just Bobby Blaze Athlete, and download my book on any tablet, cell phone, computer or Kindle, and buy a hard copy of the book, man. I'd appreciate it very much, and then look forward to my short story coming out soon. They'll all be advertising my social media, and also buy the second book that'll be out hopefully no later than late August of 2016, later this year, called I Kicked Out on Two, The Education of a Wrestler. My plug.
Well, Bobby Blaze, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. We would love to have you back in the future, and best of luck to you, and I look forward to the second book.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. It's been my pleasure. Believe that.
All right, fans, Get out there, support your local independents this week. Lots of shows going on. Make sure you pick up a copy of Bobby Blaze's second book. And before you do that, if you have not already, grab the first one. Great stuff. We'll talk to you Sunday afternoon. We got Steve the Brawler Lawler on the show. Should be an outstanding time. We'll talk to you Sunday. Buy the book. Go out there. Support your local independents. We'll talk to you soon.
Run out of luck and I couldn't feel my face. You were out of context, you were out of place. Who took you to the show? Took you to the show. I wanna know who took you to the show. Run out of luck and I couldn't feel my face. You were out of context, you were out of place. Who took you to the show? Took you to the show. I wanna know who took you to the show. What the fuck are you doing here? What the fuck are you doing here? What the fuck are you doing here? I don't know what you're doing here. Trust a broad that can name a Ramon song.